The Problem Gambling Podcast is proudly sponsored by Gamban, the simple and effective way to block access to online gambling on all your devices. If willpower slips, Gamban doesn't. Go to gamban.com to find out more. Hello and welcome to the Problem Gambling Podcast. I'm Barry Grant, an addiction counsellor with Extern Problem Gambling, and my co-host is Tony O'Reilly, also an addiction counsellor with the project and the co-author of the book Tony 10. And last week we did say that this week we'd have some brilliant guests. We have them next week. We messed up on their timing there. So this week we said we jump back into something that we actually did back in season one, and I'll put a link to the original one that we did on this. I think it was episode 6. So if you want to listen to them back to back, if you haven't heard the first one already. And this is a worksheet that myself and Tony have both used with clients in counseling sessions. It has a list of different kind of irrational thoughts that many people would have when they're experiencing an addiction to gambling. I would use a lot with clients. Quite often I get kind of multiple sessions out of it because there's so much in it. And there's so much in it, in fact, that we got through 2 of the 20 irrational statements in nearly an hour long episode of the podcast last time around, which is one of the first podcasts that we did. So I thought we'd jump back into it today because there's a lot of great stuff in it. And if you're a counselor listening to this, or if you can work with people around gambling addiction or supporting somebody with a gambling problem, this is a great way to get some conversations going and to kind of unpack and unpick some of the irrational beliefs that are common to anybody with a gambling problem and common to a lot of people who gamble full stop, you know, even if they don't necessarily have an issue with it. So we'd only gotten through the first 2. I'll put a link to this worksheet as well in the episode description. So last time around, we got through the first 2 statements, which are gambling is an easy way to earn money, which is anybody who's a regular listener to the podcast, you'll hear most of our guests say, talk about an early big win, and they will say the magic words, this is easy, right? It is an irrational belief, because if it were easy to make money gambling, there would be no venues or online places for you to gamble in, because those businesses wouldn't be able to operate because they'd be running at a loss, right? So it can't be easy to earn money from gambling unless you are the bookmaker or the casino owner. That's just a no-brainer, but it can certainly seem that way. And that's a trap that a lot of people fall into. And a lot of people start gambling when they're quite young and impressionable. The brain isn't fully formed yet. The impulse control part of the brain, especially in males, isn't fully formed until the late 20s. So very, very easy trap to fall into. The next one, the idea that gambling is a healthy recreation. And as we said in the previous episode, for some people it is, absolutely, sure, bit of crack, bit of fun, relatively harmless. And for many, many, many other people, they've experienced varying degrees of harm as a result of their gambling, or another person's gambling as well, a loved one's gambling. So not always. And I suppose that one of the things that I'd say to anybody when you're going through this list of irrational statements is the problem with them is that there's usually a chunk of truth. There's usually a little bit of rationality or fact in there. So, I mean, if you have had a big win, especially early on in one of your first bets or one of your first times gambling, then in that moment, gambling was an easy way to earn money. That's factually correct. It's true, right? But if you zoom out a bit and you look over the course of 100 bets or all of your gambling over the course of a year, and I actually listened back to part of the original episode we did on this, in which Tony, correct me if you're wrong here, you looked at your gambling transactions with Paddy Power online, you know, over the lifetime of your account. And there was one calendar year where you were in profit to the tune of, I think, 46 euros or pounds.
Yeah, it was 46 or 64. I mean, yeah, one calendar year where I was in profit. But I also, I think, mentioned that in that calendar year, I could have got loans of 10,000 euros. So I wasn't actually in profit, if that makes sense. Yeah. I was kind of, it showed up. I think there was 8 different statements. And like at the start, it might have been a small amount loss. Like it might be a couple of hundred or even a couple of thousand. Then you could, I think if you're seen as a recreation, I think, you know, you could probably live with a couple of hundred loss for a recreational, the same as if you were spending a couple of hundred euro on going to the cinema or going to concerts. But yeah, one calendar year I was actually up money. And it, of course, it was one of the first ones. It wasn't one at the end. It was one of the first ones. But it just shows that even in that calendar year that I could have got that irrational belief that it is an easy way to make money, because I probably would have won more that year than I lost. Or sorry, I didn't win more than I lost, but I probably won more than I would have normally won in other years, I suppose. Sorry. So, yeah, 64 or 40. I may check that out, because I'm always kind of saying 46 or 64. I can't remember. I may check that one out.
Yeah, and I'd love to know what your turnover was for that year, because, I mean, all in all, the turnover on that account was about 10 and a half million from start to finish. So, people can work pretty hard to make that 46. Like, if you're paying yourself by the hour, you're maybe making a fraction of a cent for every hour that you're putting in to earn that 46 euro.
I'll check it out, actually, so we'll maybe discuss it down the line again.
But yeah, with any of these statements or beliefs, there's a chunk of truth in there. There's a chunk of evidence. There's a chunk of rationality. Because if they were completely false or completely irrational, your brain would just go, no, that's bullshit. Like, this, you just kind of would kind of not engage with it in any way, shape, or form. But because there's a little bit of evidence, there's a little bit of fact in there, it makes it easier for the little addicted voice in your head to convince you that this is a good idea or that it's true. You know. So we went through the first two. Gambling is an easy way to earn money. Certainly not true for most people most of the time. Gambling is a healthy recreation. Certainly, if you look around you, you know, you can see, we see with our eyes, you know, people with alcohol problems, we see people with drug addictions, and we can see the harm that's there. It's much more visible. The harm around gambling is much easier to hide, unfortunately, until it's too late for some people. So the next one in the list, and there's no way we'll get through all these, say, based on our past performance. But, and certainly when I've done these with clients, sometimes it could take me 3, 4, 5 sessions to get through all this stuff. But it's useful, because unpacking and drilling down into the irrational beliefs goes a long way, because the little voice in your head will keep bringing back up a lot of this stuff, right? So the next one in the list is, my gambling is under control. So, I mean, like, for anybody who's actively gambling in an out of control way, they're probably thinking they have it under control. And Tony, like, just correct me if I'm wrong here, but like, I think you mentioned in one of the podcasts that you were in residential treatment about 6 weeks before you realized you actually had a gambling problem. Am I misquoting you there?
No, I always say that I remember even talking to someone about before, and you don't see gambling as the problem. You see the fact that you got caught as the problem, or the fact that you needed to get money together as a problem, or the fact that someone fell at the last race is the problem, or the fact that you're being restricted in your bets is a problem. About 6 weeks in, I was still fighting the fact. It was probably that kind of fighting the fact that I was an addict. You know, I hate that word, but it was that fact that I have that acceptance bit, the kind of first step in GA. I was really fighting with that, because I didn't want to be labeled with that kind of title or that thing that I was an addict. And I think there was probably that element of I was just a bit unlucky. Now, looking back now, that's totally rational thought, but that was probably part of it, was probably about self-preservation even that time, when I was in a really bad kind of headspace or mental health situation because of being discovered and the fallout of all that. Part of me was just thinking that, you know, that maybe I was just a little bit unlucky, which is totally bonkers when you look back at it now. And like, I can, like, when I'm doing the school presentations, when I'm sharing bits of the story, I can look back now at even at the very early stages and say, yeah, I had an issue there, you know, putting X amount of money on a horse when it was kind of just too much money. They're kind of going like, that's just wrong. But, and again, that leads into my gambling is under control, because for large periods of the time, you will stay in that headspace that you're okay, you're still in control of this. And only on reflection now, looking at, I was never in control from a very early stage. The gambling had a grip on me from a very early stage. But it's that we don't want to let go of that part of us that thinks we're in control. I think that's where the problem came. And even 6 weeks into treatment, I was still wanting to hold on to something, because I think everything else had been stripped away from me. I think at that stage, I was trying to hold on to whatever it was. And it was that final surrender when it did happen, that that's when my real recovery started, even though I was probably free from a bet for 9 weeks before then. It was only then that it really hit me. And that's why a lot of times in when you're working with people, you may only get 6 or 7 sessions if it's in the AP scheme, or you may only get, people may only engage for a couple of sessions. But it sometimes, I think Matt Gaskill touched on it as well, that he said it takes about 8 to 10 weeks for us to recondition our thinking, or, you know, recondition our thinking around gambling that may be behaviorally conditioned, thinking a certain way with it. So definitely it's a big one, is my gambling is under control. Where it wasn't. It was never under control from a very early stage.
And at any point when you're actively gambling, did it cross your mind that you were out of control with it?
No, I think, like, and that's really strange. Look back, it's like, I look back at my betting history and you can see weekends, it wasn't even just amounts of money you were spending all the weekends. It was the amount of time you were spending. I was a runaway train with it, but I never saw it that way, because I'm probably still on the tracks, probably, because, and part of me was just thinking of, yeah, just this next big win would just fix everything. Like, it was like you were never looking at what had gone wrong. You were looking at what could happen down the line to fix it. Because you'd had, again, that goes back to gambling's an easy way to earn money. That there's times where you would have won money on it, and that sticks with you when you're, even when you're losing money, you think, well, I'm only that one bet away, will fix everything. And even though I had moments of clarity in it, kind of going, geez, this isn't right, this is wrong, the solution was only one bet away. So isn't that like, but you're right, it's amazing how you rationalize every single decision or every single behavior. And again, it goes back to not wanting to accept that you have a problem, or not wanting to come clean about it, or not wanting to tell anyone about it, and fearful of the consequence of doing that. So you kind of, you nearly come up with this protective thing to convince yourself that it's under control, or that I will sort this out, because the alternative thoughts are just not good. Like having to tell family members or spouses or work on what the consequences would be of that. So I think it's a protective thing as much as everything else, in my own experience of me convincing myself that it was under control. Whereas the betting history that I have would show from very early on that it wasn't.
Yeah, and look, you're not alone there. I mean, I think this is one of the biggest issues with gambling versus other types of addictions, is that it, you know, we've said it so many times, nobody with an alcohol problem believes that they can drink their way to sobriety. Everybody with a gambling problem thinks they can gamble their way out of the situation that they've gambled themselves into. And I suppose surrendering to the fact that gambling is not going to be the solution to this gambling problem or this financial problem that I've created is not an easy thing to do. And look, if you're listening to this and if you're not sure if you've kind of lost control of your gambling, what I would suggest to you is take a month out, do whatever the gambling equivalent of dry January is, and see how you get on, right? Because if you can't do a month without going back gambling, I would suggest to you that you have lost control of it, or you certainly don't have as much control as you like to think that you have. Or, you know, see how you get on through the days, through the weeks, and over the course of the month, and just kind of keep a brief journal of it for yourself privately, and just be able to have a look back. Are you having a lot of thoughts every day? Are you really struggling not to have a bet? If that's the case, your relationship with gambling has turned into something else. You know, it's gone beyond the recreational bit. It's gone beyond a bit of fun at the weekends, or you know, that kind of mild, moderate level. If you're having a lot of thoughts, having a lot of urges, really struggling not to have a bet or not to gamble, I would suggest that you may have lost control, or certainly the relationship has become kind of dysfunctional at that point. But there, you know, there are ways to test it. You know, can you stay off a bet for a month, for example? If you find that very difficult, then maybe you need to have a think about seeking help. The next one of these beliefs is I can win it back. And again, of course, that is technically true, right? This is the problem. These irrational beliefs, of course you can win it back. You know? And many of the people that we've worked with, and certainly in your own experience, Tony, and anybody listening to this, if you're listening to this because of your own concerns about your own gambling, or you're in early stage recovery or medium to long-term recovery, you've had experiences where you've lost certain amounts of money and then you've won that money back or more, right? So you had a loss, you chased the loss, chasing the loss paid off. So of course that registers as a good idea, right? So at some point in the future when you're desperate and you're running low on money and you don't have enough money to pay the rent and you're down to your last few quid and that's supposed to be for food or putting, you know, petrol in the car to get you to work, you go, well, look, I did it before, I can do it again, I can win it back, right? And of course the odds are stacked against you being able to do that, but you will remember, I think we talked about this last week, you know, how flaky memory is. And of course there's that sunk cost fallacy as well, just kind of keep doubling down on your original bad idea, that, you know, this time I'll be able to do it because I've done it in moments of desperation before and that was positively reinforced by the win, and I'll just ignore all of the times where this terrible idea didn't work out. What are your thoughts on that one, Tony?
I think definitely is one that really resonates with me, because it is that thought of I can win it back, I can sort out the problem. And I, again, when I'm doing the school talks, I think I said numerous times in the talk, probably unconsciously, I kind of say it was always about trying to get back to that zero point of trying to win back everything. So it was that the gambling had in some ways come into my life, or the gambling had come into my life to alleviate some other problems in my life, whether it was stress, anxiety, relationship issues, whatever it might have been. This, the kind of how gambling is means that when I was playing it and when I was getting relief from, we'll say it was stress, when I was getting relief from stress, I had to play it more often. And we know that, you know, we've often said on the podcast, if you're playing more often than not, you're going to lose. If you take a bird's eye view, you said 100 transactions, you will lose more than you'll win. But then that creates its own psychology and its own problems. Like that thing of, I can win this back. And I was always convinced I could win it back. Even when I was in the hotel room in Carrickfergus, when I knew the theft was discovered, you're 1.75 million down and you have 20 or 30,000 in your online account. You said, I can still get all this money back. Now, the chances that happen are very slim, because it's psychology. Like if I look at one weekend where I had a huge amount of money, all I need to do was double up and I would have got the theft. I would have got the money that I had stolen back into the safe. But then again, it's nearly like I always think it's nearly like these game shows, they're built on psychology as well. If I had done an even money bet that I had got really researched, gambled all the money on an even money bet and doubled it up, put the money back in the safe, I could have won it back. But I couldn't have put on that much money. So again, I'll go against my own psychology. Or maybe I'll just put a bit of it on. I'll put a third of it on, or I can't put that much on. Because if I lose it, then that's everything gone. So you're all constantly playing with this psychological battle in your head, I suppose, the best way of putting it. And that's where the bookies will always win, because then if I had tried to place that huge bet, I would have been restricted because I wouldn't have had the clout to put on that huge amount of money. So to have you kind of everywhere in the game design and the psychology of it, but also it's your own psychology of, hey, I can win it back, but I'm not going to go all in to win it back just in case I don't. So it's mad how the brain, it's a tough one to kind of pull apart. But I always think that that's always in the back of every person who has a gambling problem's mind, that I can win it this back. But what does that mean? Because as you said, you could win it back and then win some. But then you're kind of going, what now? Like I think Stacey Goodwin said that she won it back. And she said, well, what now? Because it's not about the win or losing. It's about how you feel in action. So it's because you've developed a problem by winning and losing. Even if you do win it back, you're going to go back into losing anyway. Which from anyone listening from the outside must sound like bonkers kind of mindset to have. But I work with so many people and they've got into a situation and have won it back, but then they've gone back in straight away and lost it all. And then that chase and the losses. Because I think it's that dynamic, isn't it, of chasing losses versus chasing wins. When you do win it back, you're thinking, oh, my luck is in here, though. Let's go for it because I can't lose. But then, bang, you lose a tenner of 100 euro. And next thing you lose the other 90 trying to chase a tenner. It's absolutely, like when sometimes I sit back and I just think about my own gambling, you know, and I think a lot of times you're triggered within sessions because it brings a lot of it back. Like you're triggered within your own mindset versus what people are saying in sessions. And when I look back at some of the things, my rationalizations of around it, and just kind of think of looking back now, I can think, how could I have thought that way? But in that moment, I am totally convinced this is, you know, it's black and white. I can win all this money back and then go. And it's not only that I can, I'm going to win it back. And that kind of brings in the next one is I'm smart. I have a system to beat the odds. I'll use a new system or I'll get one of these tipsters or I'll only bet on Wednesdays and Thursdays or I'll do certain bets or I won't do other bets. But then when you're in there and the emotion takes over, next thing, bang, you're back where you were with it. So it's a minefield. I know I've mentioned that word a few times, but it definitely is such a minefield and you're trying to pull apart all this because there's so many different things at play, isn't there?
Yeah, and like one of the things that is everybody is up against is that one of the most complex forms of mathematics is randomness and probability. Like they're extremely complicated forms of mathematics. This is why the bookies employ some of the best mathematicians on the planet to figure out what the price of different events is going to be, and they'll set the price. And if it's horse racing, there's multiple prices within the field, and the prices are fluid because the prices will react to whatever the market is doing. And there's loads and loads of different things going on. And randomness and probability is incredibly complicated stuff, right? At a human level, we'll tell ourselves things like, I can win it back. Okay, that's technically true, right? What is the probability that you're going to win it back, right? What are the odds that you will win it back? Right, and maybe that's exactly whatever the odds are that are set by the bookies or the odds within the game, if it's roulette or whatever the thing might be. Okay, so that's the odds. So even within that, you know, you have people who are would know a lot about, say, backing horses, and they might back something at 5-1. And if you talk to somebody who's worked in a bookies who's going to set prices on things, they will tell you that that means that the horse that you've backed, if that exact same race were run 6 times with the exact same field, everything exactly the same, your horse would win 1 out of those 6 times, right? But if you ask the average person in a pub or in a classroom or whatever setting around the country, they will just say, no, if I bet a tenner, I'll win 50 plus I'll get my tenner back, right? I got a mistake. That's what 5-1 means, right? So there's the randomness and probability. Obviously, it's much more complicated than that. And you get into accumulators, which are very, very popular. And of course, they have the biggest payoffs. And then people tend to remember their wins from accumulators because the odds are much higher. You get much, much more bang for your buck. But, you know, if you're doing accumulators for in the region of 100-1 every time, you know, you're lucky if they come up once every 100 times you do those types of bets, right? You're doing well. You're sinking a lot of losing money into trying to get one of those to click. And then that's the other thing. Like, so let's say, okay, something clicks, you win it back, right? Okay, so on the face of it, that's happy days. But the problem then is, and maybe we covered this idea in one of the previous podcasts around mental health. So the thing happens, then what, right? So there's this idea in CBT called the downward arrow, then what, right? So the thing that you want to happen happens, then what? What's the most likely thing you will do based on your form guide? If you look back over your own form over all the years that you've been gambling, what's the most probable, the most likely thing that you will do on the odd occasion when you're chasing your losses and it pays off, right? Now, when I'm talking to people, again, we've both worked with many, many people with gambling problems over the years. The vast, vast majority of people, if they're being honest with themselves, will say, well, look, if I look at my form guide, what happens, you know, 100 times out of 100 is I hand the money back over, right? Maybe not the same day, because maybe it's you're coming towards the end of the day and the bookie shop is going to close. But maybe you're in first thing the next day and you're back in whatever. You're back in virtuals. You're just handing money over the counter, right? So can you win it back? Technically, yes. You know, what's the probability of it? Well, it's whatever the odds are stacked against you in the setting that you're gambling in. And then what is the probability that even if you win, you're going to hand that money back over anyway, right? But in the moment, we're codding ourselves with conditional phrases like, I can win it back. Yeah, so you could maybe win it back. Yes, that's technically possible. But it's so broad, it's broad brushstroke stuff in terms of the language that we use with ourselves. You know, am I definitely going to win it back? No, well, you can't categorically say that. What are the odds against me winning it back? Well, it's whatever the odds you're bet are. What are the odds based on my previous performance on my form guide that I'm just going to take any winnings that I get and hand them back over, right? If you're to be honest with yourself and factor all those things in, you might be less inclined to chase your losses, right? And if you can, if you're factoring all that stuff in and you're still chasing your losses, or if you're chasing your losses at all, I would strongly suggest that you do everything in your power to stop gambling and seek the help that you need to get to support you through that process, Tony.
Yeah, because it's like it's the human condition, isn't it? You bring the human element, because you can talk about all the maths in the world, but it's the human element that kind of blows apart all that theory. Because, and I just, when you were talking there, the film Sully came to mind when they were talking about, you know, if it had done all at the end of the film to do all the simulations that he could have done this. And then I think there was a point made that it factored in the human process and part of it, so that then that no one could fly it back to the airport based on putting that element into it. But, you know, I think if we did have the odds, the real odds, or the real probability odds alongside our bet of, you know, the odds will be 100 to 1, but what are the real probability odds of this? We probably might be less inclined. But I think if you're at the stage where you're gambling problematically, no odds or no probability figures, because you were convinced that, you know, this is the next big one. Like this again, I'll go back to my famous Lloyd Christmas quote, that she tells him there's 1,000,000 to 1 chance, and he says, yeah, so there is still a chance. You know, he'll focus on what he wants to focus on in that moment, because that suits his narrative of where he's at in that moment, of that he wants to get the girl, and he will have these rose tinted glasses, and he won't see any other evidence against that, only for the little chink of light that he sees. And I think that's, for me, that's gambling, because you will have all the evidence around you saying you shouldn't be doing this. Again, another Jim Carrey film where he's driving along, I think it's Bruce Almighty, and all the warning signs are telling him to stop, and he crashes the car and he falls asleep at the wheel, and then he wakes up and says, if only there was a sign. And there was all these flashing, that, like, I think, I don't know if you remember the scene, but all these flat, and it, like, because sometimes we'll only see what we want to see. And again, that goes back to the previous one, my gambling is under control. You won't want to see that's out of control, because you only want to see that's in control. And then you will go back to all your wins that will back up your belief in that moment. So that's why we have to, within this worksheet, as two of us use a lot, it's really good to challenge those beliefs with the, what's the evidence for, the evidence against. But that's very hard to do when you're in that moment. It's when you have come out of the addictive cycle, you can sometimes work with someone to kind of get them to look back at it. And, you know, we've worked with many people who've really gone through this form and really created their new rational beliefs based on those statements. But then in any given set of circumstances, those statements can go out the window because they're overwhelmed in certain situations and go back to the automatic thinking, the automatic pilot of, I can win it back, or my gambling's in control, or I can go back and just do it with a tenner, or sure, it's only in Cheltenham. I have an interest in the horse races, or I'll just watch it without placing a bet. But and in that moment, they're fully convinced and they're fully believed that that will happen. But that's addiction. It never happens the way we always think it's going to happen.
Yeah, and that's, you're kind of up against it. You know, it's that kind of chimp paradox thing where when we're in that state of emotional arousal, you know, whatever thought pops into our head seems like a good idea, right? It doesn't have to be about gambling. It could be about lots of other impulsive type decisions. And I suppose part of being in recovery, or part of trying to live, I suppose, a kind of a balanced life, is trying to be able to feel whatever you're feeling, manage the emotional arousal, not have knee-jerk reactions to external stimuli. We're always going to have different things that are going to be triggering to us, or that kind of cause us to feel anxious or stressed or depressed or whatever it might be, angry. And to be able to, okay, be with that. I'm feeling intense feelings. That's okay. I don't have to have a knee-jerk reaction that involves gambling to deal with these intense feelings, or drinking, or drugs, or eating, overeating, whatever it might be. Tony?
Yeah, I was just thinking when you were talking there as well, like, you know, that I can win it back is the statement. But lots of times alongside that is that I have to win it back. And it's usually I have to win it back before her, you know, before my wife opens the bank statements, or before I have to get that money and pay off my mortgage, or before I have to go on holidays. So I think that adds a little bit of pressure to, I have to win it back, kind of does add into, I can win it back, because you start believing that this is the only way I can fix the problem. I think that's a lot of the mindset that kind of underpins that kind of, that bit of that thinking in around gambling. And again, is the always, what's the evidence? Get the evidence for is, well, I've won it before. I've won those large amounts before. As you said, we don't look at the losses. We only tend to look at the wins. We don't look at the full picture of, yeah, I may have won that amount before, but I've probably lost double that trying to win that amount. So it's a really, yeah, it's a complex one, because that's one that is always front and center when you're at that problematic stage of gambling. I can win it all back. And it's usually as well as, and once I win it back, then I'll stop. And you know, and I know from my own experience of, like, I did win it back at one stage. I got back to a point where I was up. Now, in fairness, that was earlier on in my gambling journey. I was probably at the heavy to at-risk gambling stage. I probably wasn't as far down as disordered at that stage, but I won it all back. I had it all back. I could pay it off absolutely everything, and I would have been sitting there with €1,000 in my bank balance saying, right, and my thought was, brilliant, I can go on a holiday now. It's a free holiday. And then I was thinking, sure, I don't need a holiday. I can put €1,000 back in. And before I got a chance even to take out the other money I'd won, it was all gone. And that had a huge snowball effect with my gambling then. Because I definitely think that, I always talk about the CSK Moscow game. That was the big catalyst. But that was another big moment where, when I lost that large amount of money that could have fixed all this, I could have won it all back. Or I did win it all back, and then it snowballed into, oh crap, I'm after losing it all now. So I have to try win all that one back again. And that creates its own narrative going forward.
Yeah, and I suppose that's the thing for anyone listening, just to be honest with yourself about that, you know, and to look at your own form over the years, just to go back, well, you know, what have I done when I've won? Like, did I cash out and close all my accounts and skip off into the sunset with my winnings, or did I get it handed all back over, right? Which is normal, like, rush of blood to the head, high emotional arousal, pump full of adrenaline, throw in a bit of greed, which is a normal thing that we all have a bit of that going on as well. And yeah, that stuff can easily happen. But like, in the cold light of day, when you're not in that highly emotionally aroused state, to be able to sit back and analyze your own behavior, like, you know, to study your own form guide the way you might do if you're studying horses or football or anything else, and just be able to, if you're gambling online, this is much easier to do. You can actually look at all the different transactions, but just to be honest with yourself about it. And I suppose you mentioned the thing, I have to win it back. When you're into the have to stage, you're automatically into the high levels of emotional arousal. You are in desperation now. I've gambled the rent money, I've gambled the mortgage money. At that moment, it doesn't seem like you've got a lot of other options. Now, we work with people every day of the week who hit that kind of crisis point, that rock bottom, where they keep doing that and they keep doing it, and they find other ways to get their hands on money, and they keep chasing until there's usually some very substantial amount of debt. And then, you know, either they're kind of caught by someone, or they put their hands up and say, well, look, this is, I've run out of road here, right? It has to stop at that point. Ideally, it's better to put your hands up earlier in the day and say, look, cut my losses. You know, we spoke about it the last day, the sunk cost fallacy. Being able to cut your losses earlier in the day is much, much better than cutting your losses a few months or years down the line when it's multiplied by 10 or more in some cases. And again, easier said than done, right? I'm not saying this stuff is necessarily easy, but in those moments when you're able to kind of think clearly, you're not in that highly emotionally aroused state, just to be able to sit back, study your own form, think about, look, what's the most likely thing that's going to happen here? And to be honest with yourself, and again, back to that other one, if you feel that your gambling is out of control in any way, or if you're not sure, you're on the fence, take a break, commit to, set an intention, commit to, let's say, a month, and then just journal or monitor how you're feeling over the course of that month. If you can't make it through the month, what does that tell you? You know, if you can't make it through a day, if you can't make it through a week, if you're finding it hard to sleep at night, if you're tossing and turning, if you're totally preoccupied with it, what does that tell you about your relationship with gambling? Maybe one or two more before we finish up today. There's loads in this, and we'll probably come back to it again another day. You touched on this one already. I'm smart. I have a system to beat the odds. I've worked with loads of people who've had all sorts of amazing systems, certainly their beliefs around systems. And in fairness, in some cases, for some people, things like matched betting, where you're really kind of putting in a lot of time and effort and studying and, you know, checking, let's say, the prices on the betting exchanges to see if there's a price differential between what the bookies are offering, and then you can lay it off at a different price on the betting exchanges. So, you know, whether your selection wins or loses, you're covered and you're going to grind out some bit of a profit out of it. There are other ones. I've heard all sorts of weird and wacky ones. Some of them are completely irrational and off the wall, and some have a bit more rationality about them. But in my experience of working with people, even the people who've really had systems that would kind of grind out some bit of a profit, usually they're so boring and they're so resource heavy that, you know, requires so much time and energy to kind of grind out that bit of profit, that quite often come the end of the day or come the end of the week, they're hungry, angry, lonely, or tired, or a combination of all those, and they go, "Fuck this for Game of Soldiers," and they take what their profits and they lump it on a horse at even money or whatever it is. And then one of two things happens: either that selection wins and they go, "Oh, this is much better, I'll do this instead," or it loses and now all their hard work is going to end the drain, so they go chasing it, you know, backing horses or doing, you know, kind of standard enough stuff, and the system goes out the window. Tony, what are your thoughts on that one?
Yeah, a couple of things came to mind you were talking about. I think I totally agree with what you're saying. I would have worked with a few people who would have started off as poker players and very disciplined in, you know, studying how to play the game, studying, you know, you play the man, not the cards, all this kind of stuff. And then to replicate that high after the game, if they'd won the big tournament, they would say, "I'll just go and do a bit of sports betting." And one person in particular comes to mind where he would have been really good at the poker and won a lot of tournaments. But then when he discovered sports betting, he tried to go with the same system or the same thing, but he found it totally different. And he always used to say, like at a card game, you know, if you're the fish at the table, isn't it? If you're the fish at the table, if you don't recognize who the fish is at the table, then you are the fish. And he always was very good at that in the poker game. But then when he realized that when he went into sports betting, he was the fish every single time because all the odds were stocked against him. Whereas in the poker, he had some way of playing the odds, I suppose, even if they were out of your, you know, even if the probability was against you, you could bluff or you could play the man. And I think when he tried to do the say that system into the sports betting, it definitely didn't work. I think the one word that came to mind, and I know I've mentioned it already, is emotion. No matter what system you have in place, once emotion comes in, all plans and systems go out the window. And I was just laughing to myself here while you were talking as well. Like, you know, there's been many times that I've had workshops, and I kind of said, right, I'm just going to go out. And it'd be usually to have a night off the night before, and I'm going to go down to the car and have a few drinks with the lads. And next thing, 4 o'clock in the morning, I'm still out drinking because my plan was to go home at 11. But then you get caught up in the crack and the emotion, you haven't seen him in a while, and you're like, "Sure, what about the course?" And you'll rationalize it, "Sure, I won't go, and I'm sure I'll do this." And you're spending a couple of €100 booking CBD courses. And for so long, there were so many of them, I was hung over going into them because I had a plan. I'm just going to go because I'm down around the area, have a few drinks. And it's, I find that, I don't know whether that's kind of even apt for, to show the example of that, but any planning that we have in place, like I think the only people that, in a gambling sense, that would have a system to beat the odds, maybe professional gamblers, because they take the emotion out of it. They will look at, maybe I'm wrong, you're humming and hawing there maybe, but it's that kind of thing of to go in and do one bet and they won't chase if they win or they won't chase if they lost. I'd say there's more of a discipline there more than anything else. And I think if you have a problem with gambling, that discipline or that emotion, the discipline is definitely not there, but the emotion is a lot more, because when you have that bad beat, you want to get back to that even keel straight away. I don't know if any of that really kind of made sense in regards to that, but it's just kind of what popped into the head.
Well, definitely the poker thing. I've worked with lots of people in that same situation. And like that poker, there's an element of skill to poker. Like, there's no two ways about it, and it's humans versus other humans. So you can, yeah, play the man or play your opponent to a degree, and you can give yourself an edge, right, in poker as a player. As an individual, like you versus the bookies, the chances of you getting an edge on the bookies are basically zero. Like, everything is against you. Like, everything is stacked against you. You know, again, you can win an individual bet, fair play to you, no problem. You can win multiple bets again. That can happen. You can have a mad random accumulator that can click. Absolutely, that can happen. But like that, over the course of a year, the chances of you making a profit off the bookies are pretty low, and you would have to put a lot of time and energy into making even the tiniest profit off the bookies over a year, right? You'll have individual wins along the way. You will have plenty of losses along the way, but the chances of you making an annual profit off the bookies, or, you know, forget about casinos, because that has a built-in return to player edge or house edge there anyway. So I mean, that's pre-calculated. Even in physical roulette games, like, the edge is built in. You know, those games, some of those games are hundreds of years old. The edge has been built in from day one. So yeah, I've seen that with loads of people who are good at poker. They've developed skills, they've studied it a lot. You know, you can give yourself an edge in poker. You have no chance of giving yourself an edge, you know, in casino games where there's randomness up against the bookies in sports betting. Forget about it. And that thing, I've seen it, yeah, with loads of people where they do well at poker and then they just take all their winnings from poker and start either doing casino games where they're up against it, or sports betting where they're up against it. And, you know, the professional gamblers, you know, there's very, very few of those out there. And like that, they would wait. They might do one bet every few months. They'll wait and wait and wait. They'll see that the bookies kind of price something wrong. Quite often they'll do a big bet, maybe at short odds. And if they lose, they don't chase their losses. And the bookies, you know, they're on the bookies' radar. So, I mean, it's hard for them to even get a bet on in the first place. Right? So if you're listening to this, dreaming of becoming a professional gambler, yeah, good luck with that, because if you're taking money off them with any sort of regularity, you know, they'll restrict your stakes or they'll shut you down completely. And that'll happen in land-based bookie shops, and it'll happen a lot quicker online as well, because they can identify it a lot quicker online. So that's not happening. But systems, yeah, I mean, I've heard, and roulette, sweet mother of Jesus, if you're listening to this and you think you have a system for beating roulette, you do not. I guarantee you do not have a system for beating roulette. And there are many, many systems out there, and I've put a bit of time into studying some of them. If you're listening to this and you go, no, Barry, there are systems for beating roulette. There are systems where if you had a gigantic pot of money starting off, and if there's no limit on the stakes that you can put on the table, maybe, just maybe, you know, over a certain number of spins, you might make a profit. And if you have enough self-discipline, maybe you'll cash out when you're a profit, when you have the profit. But like, you have to have a huge amount of money starting out. And again, do you want to risk losing that? And then if there's any sort of a stake limit on the table, if you have enough losses, you know, one of the most basic systems on roulette is just to keep doubling your stake. You know, let's say you pick either red or black, and then every time you lose, you double your stake, right? Which, again, you could win back the money that you've lost. Again, you're still not making any profit at that point, right? But if there's a stake limit on the table, you could hit the stake limit before you've had a winner, right? So, I mean, all this stuff needs to be factored in. And then you also need to factor in the fact that you're not a robot. You are fallible. You'll get hungry, angry, lonely, or tired. You will have other weaknesses. You will have other fallibilities. You will experience emotional arousal. You will get angry. You will get stressed, depressed, you name it. And the thing that you're playing against doesn't experience any of those things, right? It doesn't experience any of those things. So you versus that machine, and when I say machine, I just mean the big entity that is the gambling company that you're trying to beat. Forget about it. And whatever system you think you've dreamt up, they had figured out a way to protect themselves against that 100 years ago. I guarantee it. right? There's nothing new under the sun in terms of coming up with systems to win at any form of gambling. There's nothing new. If you think you've come up with a new system, you have not. If somebody on the internet is telling you they have a system, they do not. Just be very, 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 very careful. It's a psychological trap to think that you can come up with something that nobody's ever come up with before to beat this stuff. Like, they do this for a living, right? They do it for a living. They hire the best, brightest people on the planet to make sure that they're not wide open to some genius coming up with a system that's going to take money off them. Forget about it, right? If you're thinking you have a system, you're already in a bad headspace in terms of your gambling, right? Just before we finish up today, Tony, you mentioned it before with the 14-1 shots on the virtuals. I don't know, would you call that a system, or was that something that you believed?
Based on probably the first one I might have done, or the first big win I might have had on it, might have been a 14-1. It wasn't based on anything other than, I think in the virtuals, people will either pick numbers, or they'll pick odds, or they'll pick colors, or they'll pick names. And that's why all the names are so diverse on it, to connect with different parts. Oh, that's my auntie's name, or that's my uncle's name. I must have at some stage won a 14-1. And at that time, it may have been the one that got me out of trouble for a day. So then I backed every 14-1. So it's just, no, there's no system. There's no system to any of it. I tried at one stage to have a system at the latter stages of my, well, probably in the mid of my gambling addiction, where I start off with an even money and then I'd have a 1-2, a 1-3, a 1-4, a 1-5, and a 1-6. So it's constantly doubling up. And if the even money won, I was thinking, oh, geez, this is brilliant. Now the bet sixes let me down. The 1-5s let me down. So even though the system, I think, is foolproof, and the kind of one, the big one was the first one. And I'd always have that bet going first, the even money shot, so that if you doubled up straight away, you know, on your stake, and then the 1-2 would kind of keep it ticking along. Yeah, it rarely worked. Rarely. I mean, like, as you said, 50 of them, 2 of them might come in. But you think, oh, because it's worked at that time, that may have, as I said, got you out of trouble, or may have meant so much in that moment, your brain clicks into that. I mean, oh, this system will always work. So again, it's that kind of your judgment is clouded at every single point. And as you said, the bookies are set up to take advantage of that cloudness in your thinking, because that's why there's stuff on every 30 seconds or four, whatever it is now. I knew it used to be every minute or two. There'll be something on in the bookies. There's a radio in the background feeding you all this information as well. They're not feeding you that information so that you're going to clear them out. They're feeding you information to guide you. Like the lunchtime 49s, these are the cold numbers. And you're kind of going, oh, geez, they're going to come up. That's where you think your thinking goes. But as you said, it's still the algorithm. It's still the same chance of that it would have come up. But that's where we're, I've seen many people go into bookies and they've lost the money before they've even put the money on what they went into back. And I've had that experience and I've talked about before. And it's just because it's set up just to kind of, as soon as you walk in there, you're hit with all these lights, sounds, comfort, in the plush carpets, the comfy seats, the coffee, the custard creams, which I used to always love when I was in there. And all this kind of stuff, it's just, and then the bell for the dog race. So as soon as you hear the bell, it gives you 30 seconds or whatever it might be. You're running up, you're throwing dock, and you're running. You're not even thinking rationally in that moment. So that all the systems go out the window when you're in there, because when you're in there, it's like, as my sister always said, it was like a candy shop to a child when I went in. I was going to use another analogy there, but I better not. It was like, I was just kind of going, like, you're so overwhelmed with it. And then if you add that overwhelmness to the other overwhelmnesses that might be in your life, like the need to get that money back quickly or the need to escape from some problem, it's just a recipe for disaster, a recipe for... Now, if you're walking into the bookie and placing your bet and walking back out and watching the race at home, or even watching the race in the bookies, yeah, that's what the majority of people will do. But I think if you're in there frying at the time, and sometimes because you're in there probably checking the race odds or checking the form or checking that, you're always hearing this subliminally in the background, kind of going, bet now, bet now. That's all you're hearing, bet now, bet now. And I think that's why so many people, it becomes part of their lives so much more easier. And then if you have that on your mobile device, but that's ending, bet now, bet now, what chance do we have?
Well, there is always a chance because recovery is possible and it's possible to come out the other side of this. But yeah, I mean, those places are designed to disorientate you as much as humanly possible. I mean, as you know, I live in Tremor, which is a little seaside town. They have the fun fair in the summertime. And once you walk in there, there's 10 different types of music playing. There's all, everything's noisy and bright and gaudy and loud. It's just a very simple trick to kind of disorientate people. Because when you're in that disorientated state, you're much more likely to act impulsively.
Yep.
Very simple, right? Not rocket science, right? It's not just the bookies who do that. Like it's a well kind of practiced marketing ploy. Okay, we're stuck for time today. We'll probably come back to this one because there's loads in this and it's useful to unpack some of these beliefs. And again, like a lot of them kind of feed into one another, but most people will have experienced some of these as part of their gambling or their issues with gambling, their gambling addiction. And it's really, really useful to kind of put them under a microscope. Be honest with yourself about your relationship with these beliefs. You know, are the supposedly very simple way of drilling down into something is just to say, look, is it helping or harming, right? Is this belief helping me or is it harming me, right? If it's in the harming category, it's important to try and find ways to challenge it, right? That's the most important thing. Okay, next week, we will definitely have some really cool guests.
Fingers crossed.
So tune in next week for the next episode of the Problem Gambling Podcast. Take care. Bye.
The Problem Gambling Podcast is proudly sponsored by Gamban, the simple and effective way to block access to online gambling on all your devices. If willpower slips, Gamban doesn't. Go to Gamban.com to find out more. We'll be right back.